A very good morning to you, my dear listener. Good morning, Namibia, wherever you find yourself in this beautiful, beautiful land of the brave. A very good morning to you, and how are you doing this morning? It's a beautiful morning. I think I don't know whether in your part, in the part of your in the part of your wherever you are, it's getting a bit cold. And the mornings are getting a little bit cold, you know. Maybe winter, slowly by slowly, is stepping in. So how is your morning so far? How's your Tuesday morning? It's a Tuesday morning, the 14th of April. We're almost in the middle of the month. So good morning to you, and welcome to your favorite station, Eagle FM, your favorite radio station. Eagle FM's end. Thanks for joining us here on Unpacking the Day. So, my name is Mike Oshaveni, and if you're just joining us, you're tuning to Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what's really going on in terms of business news, you know, economic news and political news. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, you know, trends and numbers making headlines. So we keep it clear here, and always curious, asking the questions that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space. This is your platform to unpack the headline with me, with moi, and get to the heart of the story. So basically, that's what we do here. And thank you for joining us, and welcome. Be part of the family if you're just joining us this morning. And if you are the regular, well, welcome on board. Let's do this. And as we do it, as we do every day. So first of all, we start with our favorite segment. Our favorite segment, you know, on this day in Africa. Just go back into history. So let me greet my continent. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are tuning in from across this beautiful continent and around the world. Welcome to On This Day in Africa. So today we are turning in the pages of history back to April 14th, and we have got a heavy but important piece of history for you today. So let's get into it. We're starting in 1830. In 1830, and this is a tough one. So the Kingdom of Dahomey, in what we now called Benin, set up a slaving port on the Gulf of Guinea. They called it Cotonou. In the Fon language, that means by the river of death. By the river of death, Cotonou. Now, if that name doesn't send chill down your spine, I don't know. I don't know what will, you know? Now, okay, the port was born out of military conquest. Dahomey was a raiding neighborhood community, capturing people and selling them into transatlantic slave trade. Now, Cotonou, as it's known today, went on to become the largest city and economic capital of Benin. But its origins carry a weight that the country still reckon with to this very day, and painful beginning for a place millions now call home. All right. Fast forward to 1967, and we are in Togo. On this day, April the 14th, a lieutenant colonel by the name
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right. Welcome back. Oh my goodness. Yeah, on this day, April the 14th, Lieutenant Colonel by the name of Nasigbe Eadema. My good Lord, my throat is just blocked. Okay, Nasigbe Eadema seized power in a military coup, overthrowing President Nicholas Granitsky. Oh, it sounds like Russians, President Nicholas Granitsky. So he overthrew President Nicholas Granitsky. Now here's the thing about coups. They happen in a flash, but the aftermath can last for decades sometimes. And this exactly what happened here. Eadema didn't just take over for a year or two. No. He held on to power for 38 years. That made him actually, what's wrong with me? So that made him one of the longest serving leader on the entire African continent. I think so. One of the longest, you know, serving leader on the continent. So his rule was described as authoritarian, political, like political opposition were crushed. Anyone who dissent was not, the dissent was not tolerated. And yet Western government often looked the other way because he kept the country stable. So, yeah, at least that's what they say anyway. So Eadema died in office in 2005. And if you are wondering now whether his family stayed in politics, yes, they did. His son Faure is still the president of Togo today. So the apple, it seems it didn't fall far from the tree. It looks as if it hasn't fall far from the tree. Now in 1986, we shift to Libya. The United States launched a series of airstrikes against target in Tripoli and Benghazi. This was ordered by the president, President Ronald Reagan. The reason given was retaliation for Libya, Libya's alleged involvement in the bombing of Berlin, discotheque earlier that year. Now that disco was popular with American servicemen, so two American soldiers were killed, and dozen more were injured. So President Reagan called the strike a self-defense against terrorist attack. And Libya, for its part, said it was an act of war and that civilian, including children, had been killed. The operation was codenamed, El Dorado Canyon, and it marked one of the most direct confrontation between the U.S. And Libya during the Cold War era. And finally, in 2014, and this is just fresh in our mind, This is perhaps the heaviest story of today, of the day. Two devastating events in Nigeria, both linked to the terrorist group Boko Haram. Well, it's still around. First, a bombing at a busy bus station in Nyanya, just outside the capital, Abuja. At least eight people were killed. 100 more were injured. You know, the blast tore through the morning rush hours, you know, where people going to work, going to school, going about their daily lives. So it was chaos, you know, it was heartbreaking. I mean, many of us have seen this. So, but worse was still actually to come on the very same day. Later that same day, Boko Haram militants stormed a secondary school in the town of Chibok, you know, in Borno State, and abducted 276 schoolgirls from their dormitories in the middle of the night. 276 girls, you know. So the world reacted outrage. The world reacted with outrage. You remember the hashtag Bring Back Our Girls campaign, which went viral from social media to the, you know, to the White House, from Lagos to London. People held up signs and demanded action. So, and yet, despite the global attention, despite military effort, despite negotiations, many of those girls remain in captivity for years. So some escape on their own. Some were released in prison swap, because there was some kind of a swap as well at some point. But as of today, over 100 of them are still uncounted for. They're still uncounted for. Over a decade later, and family in Chibok still don't know if their daughters are alive or dead. Well, that's our segment for today, April the 14th, and this has been On This Day in Africa. So we'll be back.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the you in UNAM is you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Well, a very good morning to you. Our time is 16 minutes past the hour of 8. And if you're just tuning in, this is Unpacking the Day. And we're coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. And we will be live until the hour of 10 o'clock. Around quarter past nine, we will have an interview. So make sure that you stay tuned in around that time. All right. So good morning. And here's today's thought for the day. The higher the monkey climbs, the more he shows his tail. I'm bewitched. I am bewitched. I'm convinced I'm bewitched. All right. Now, the higher the monkey climbs, the more he shows his tail. Now, in simple words, the more power, success, or attention a person actually gets, the more their true color begins to show. Now, it teaches us that climbing higher in life does not hide who you are. In actual fact, it reveals you. You know. So today, as we move through the day, let us remember that success should make us better. It should make us better, not proud. Success should make us humble, not careless. So because when life lifts you up, that is when people really see what you are made of. So that's our thought for the day, that the higher the monkey climbs, the more he shows his tail. Hopefully that makes sense to you as well. All right, welcome. And so, yeah, what you can look forward in this episode of Unpacking the Day. Yeah, do you remember yesterday edition of the of the Villager, we had a front page story, you know, about the Namibia Retirement Fund. You know, the Namibia Retirement Fund industry actually continues actually to dominate the financial landscape, managing over 301.7 billion, you know, and this is for nearly 430 members. So we're looking at that story quickly before we get to our interview this morning. And our interview will be looking at the, you know, it will be with Mr. Frederico Links. So from the IPPR. So this is about the Institute for Policy Research has warned that the Namibian government decision to bypass the Central Procurement Board of Namibia in regard to the 350 million that was done in a direct tender. So it creates a significant risk of corruption and a wasteful expenditure, according to the IPPR. So we will have Mr. Links, Federico, here around quarter past nine to engage him on that aspect. So make sure that you tune in for that as well. Well, and you know the drill here. The drill is that your participation will also be part of the show, is actually part of the show. Make sure that you are unpacking with me and be able to come through as well and have your share and have your contribution and your reaction on some of the topic or some of the issues that we're discussing. You are the one that make this show. Make sure that you're part of the show. All right. We're coming back in a sec.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Yes, that's very right. And if you want to stay connected with Eagle FM anytime, anywhere, you know, or wherever you are, it doesn't matter. You can listen to Eagle FM actually wherever you are. You know, you can listen to us through Eagle FM website. You can go to a website, you'll get in the office and you think, oh no, now I'm getting out of my car. How am I continuing to listen? Just get to office. If you have a laptop or have a computer, you know, have internet. Yeah, you can listen to Eagle FM through our website. And the most important thing, you can also download the Eagle FM mobile app, you know, and that one you can listen to Eagle FM wherever you are. You know, you are connected to Eagle FM anytime, anywhere. Make sure that you download that so that you don't miss anything, you know. All right. And the good thing is that on the Eagle FM app, there's so many features. And sometimes the vacancies as well there. So make sure that you download that. Okay. Many reports. If you love report, especially financial report and business report. So make sure that you download that. All right. So let's get into today's story. You know, 301.7 billion. That is the total value of the retirement saving held by by how many people? By how many members? About 426 Namibian. As of the end of December 2025. Now, that amount of money is actually, it's quite a lot. It's a massive money, you know, and this is not government money. This is not donor funding, you know. This is the hard-earned saving of ordinary Namibians, deducted from their salary every single month, year after year, yeah. Building up, becoming the biggest pool. If you look at that, that's actually the biggest pool of capital, you know, biggest pool of capital in the country. You know, that's massive money. So, and here's what makes this story truly important. You know, this money does not just sit in a bank. Okay. Let's say, for example, you put in a bank vault somewhere, you know, gathering dust. No, it doesn't. It's not just sitting in a bank vault, you know, kind of like that. A lot of money somewhere, you stack them up there. No, it's actually invested. It's invested across Namibia, according to the article. It's invested across Namibia and around the world. Yeah, around what? In property, in shares, and in businesses. So, and that massive money. That money fuels economy, okay? It fuels the economy to create jobs, you know. It shapes the future of this country. So, and yet, most of Namibians, really, probably you too, most of Namibians have absolutely no idea how this money is actually being used. Do you have an idea how this money is used? Where it goes? Do you have an idea where does this money goes? And who gets to decide actually? Yeah, probably. So that's what we're going to unpack this morning. Okay. That's what we're going to unpack in this segment. Okay. So now, but first of all, let's look at the big numbers. You know, you remember here we look at numbers. I said, follow the money and numbers don't lie. Okay. So. Always follow the money, okay? That's the trail of where you find life. Where, if you want to find, it's like when you're looking for the water, you know, follow the trail, you know? So in this case, what we're talking about, you know, here we're talking about business, we're talking about economics, we're talking about politics sometimes, you know? So what do you need to do? Follow the money, okay? Follow the money and the numbers. The numbers won't lie. Namibian has 64 registered retirement funds. You know, together they hold this now 301.7 billion. You know, that is from last year. That's a 4.5% from the previous quarter. up 15%. From last year, from a year ago. Okay, so that's actually doing really good. Now, the regulator, NAMFISA, tells us this growth came from a favorable financial market performance. Well, I wouldn't really know what is exactly that. Favorable financial market performance. Okay. So I have to check what where is exactly. They said, well, I mean, in the plain language, it means just the stock market did well, you know, property. You know, that's why I hate financial people. You know, when they tell financial market performance, you know, just tell us the stock market, you know, did well, property values went up or held up, you know, investment paid off, you know, good news. Huh? So that's what it's all about. Now, you know, always have these technical words that you don't even understand. You know, it sounds good, but you don't know what exactly it means. All right. So that's what it's actually meaning, okay? That the stock market did well. That's why with the favorable financial, this happened, the growth happened because of that favorable financial market performance. So market did well, stock market did well, property values, you know, held up, and an investment also paid off, you know. But there was also a story of some a loss of some investment as well, especially this was for GIPF, all right? Remember, we have about 67 registered retired funds. So, yeah. But here's the thing, okay, about favorite market, okay? The favorable markets. You remember, you know, they do not stay favorable forever. That's the thing. Yeah? They fluctuate. They don't stay favorable that this is going to be remain favorable all the time. We have seen global shock before. We did see block of shock. Remember, one of the worst was the COVID-19 crash to commodity price collapses. You know, the COVID-19, you know, crash to commodity price, and the commodity price actually collapses. So when market tumble, you know, so when market tumble, retirement funds also take hit. Okay, and when retirement funds take a hit, it is not a faceless corporation that suffer. It actually so we're going to come back after this commercial. Quickly, stay tuned.
Great news. Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Inbox? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Inbox has to offer at an unbeatable price. Inbox. The world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. Okay, that's another product that you should have on your phone. All right. Okay, now I was just saying that, you know, the what the report said, you know, this growth came because of the favorable market, and I was just saying that no market, you know, when the market tumble. Retirement fund take hit as well. So, and when the retirement funds take a hit, you know, you have to, you know, this is not about some faceless corporation that suffers. You know, it's the pensioners in Gobabis, you know, who see their money payout shrink or get decreased. Okay, it is the worker in Wavish Bay, you know, who was counting on a lump sum after 30 years of service, you know. So it's the number looks good today. The number looks today, but ask yourself this. What happened when the tide turns? If the tide turns, what happened? And think of it this way, all right? I don't know whether it's going to work. Okay. It should work, you know. Imagine you're driving a loaded truck across the Namib Desert. Okay. And the road is, at this point, the road is smooth right now. Okay, the road is smooth right now. The sun is shining. The fuel tank is full. And that is the favorable market. Now, that's not the favorable market. Now, but you know what lies ahead. Sand track, you know, gravel road. Sometimes you hit a ditch as well. You know, the question is not whether the road will get rough. Okay, that's not the point. The point is that the question is whether your truck, okay, is built to survive it. Do you get the point? So are these retirement funds are built, you know, to survive a tough time ahead? So that's the question. Okay? And that is exactly the question we need to be asking about our retirement funds. That's the question we need to ask. So maybe the other question we need to ask is, where does the money actually go? Where the money goes? Let's talk where your pension money is being invested. Because this is where the story moves from numbers on page to a real impact on your life. So, and for years, there has been a push to keep more retirement money inside Namibia. That has been, you know, for years that has been the push. Okay? The argument is very simple, which I agree with. The argument is very simple. All right, we have somebody knocking on my door. Let's see what he has to say. A very good morning to you, my friend.
Good morning to you, my best friend at work.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you, sister?
I'm all right.
Wonderful.
Mm.
Yeah, the question is a bit complex.
Yeah, that's good. Should always be complex.
But I understand the issue of analyzing, explaining clearly,
yeah,
in simple terms, some of those financial data.
Yeah.
That I understand the challenge, and that was the reason why the funds, for example, let's say now GIPF fund,
yeah,
and many others. And you know how they grow, like you said, and the terms favorable. Favorable is not something that much confusing.
Yeah.
So even yesterday when we were talking about, you know, when you get figure, I don't know where people say figure don't lie. Where is that situation coming from, that figure don't lie? That's why we need to say, for example, I was giving an example. I say, yes, if you look at some issues in life, maybe even from institutions, and this I believe that are institutionalized. Say we are helping people, so giving them funds and things like that.
Yeah.
Then you find out that, yes, it's only segment of, you know, the population, you understand, that kind of gender, from a gender perspective.
Yeah.
So, and then you now analyze the thing. So what I want to say here is that the favorable,
yeah,
if it's an environment that is favorable for you to invest or to grow.
Yeah, no, definitely. You have to get to take advantage of favorable.
So now, what now, for example, I understand yesterday we were talking about hospitals, the VIPs and others. And you know, this service that is needed to our people. So, and I was also listening and I read that, on Anjogo, 120, is it 20 beds?
Yeah.
And many, many other facilities for maternity. So now, when you look at the money that is grown, like you say, they have grown, and because of this environment.
Yeah.
For us now to get into a Mafuma, and I'm sure the area there on Godiva and all these things, there has been a Matare and Dobe, that side still there.
Mafuma is case now. Why are you talking about Mafuma?
Excuse me. You know how much is it? If you ask that they can name it.
Yeah.
The cooked one is 150. The one that is not cooked, that you go and cook at your home, and then you enjoy the delicious whatever your people can prepare for you, is 200. And these are the things that is sustainable. They are sustainable. So okay. You can...
I'm going to come to a retirement fund, please.
No, I'm just... Because the retirement fund, the money that is there, is waiting for you to go and get it and go and get it.
Exactly. You need to get it. Let's motivate
these young ones.
Yeah.
To say when you will get figure of this nature. And I think the workshop that was... there, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, for the journalists, was actually aimed at that point to ensure that this information are simplified.
Yeah.
They are made well understood in the simple terms. For you, for example, if I could approach that topic, I'm not saying that you are not doing that thing. I'm just trying to say what we're talking about data. And in line with what these people are saying.
You should be proud of me. Kind of like I'm the one who actually coming in, you know, dissect data here, you know?
No, I'm very proud of you. And like, that's why I participate. This is the program. It doesn't concern me or build me or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I won't participate in that kind of program. I won't even listen.
Yeah.
So the reason why I'm saying so is not because I'm trying to downplay your knowledge or whatever.
No, I'm just joking. I'm saying that is
what we are told, you understand? Because if you bring information to me like that, then just a lay person.
Yeah.
When I'm not even able to understand. I don't even know that yes, this one, they can also go there and borrow money and do something for myself or organize people at my village to harvest the mafuma, whatever the case may be. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. This is what information is saying, and the environment is conducive, favorable for you to do so, and then you advise those who are they want to become entrepreneurs to go and see.
Mm.
So thank you very much. I'll listen to the program. Wait for and listen to that program that you're talking about.
All right. Stay tuned, yeah.
All right. A very good morning to you. Please, welcome. Welcome. This is Unpacking the Day. And if you're just joining us, welcome. So welcome. All right. Now, we talk about, you know, the retirement money. As I said, I was saying that for years, there has been a push. There has been a push to keep more retirement money inside Namibia. The argument is very simple. If our pension saving funds, Namibia, Namibian business, you know, Namibian property and Namibian infrastructure, then the whole economy benefits. So, and that argument has some merit, you know, it has some merit when pension money builds a shopping center in Oshakati, or finances a house development, or maybe houses development in Swakopmund, or invest in a local manufacturing plant, you know, jobs are created. So that, as I said, that argument has some merit. And tax revenue goes up, okay? Jobs are created, tax revenues goes up, you know, community grows, okay? Community grows. And here's the good news from the latest numbers, domestic investment holding have increased from 48.2% to 50.3%. That's actually good news. So that means just over half of all retirement money is now invested right here at home. Okay. So, and the fund is still above, you know, there's this limit that they always, you know, put up. It's above the minimum requirement of 45%. Yeah. So on paper, the domestic investment rules are working. Okay. They're working. So, But if you scratch beneath the surface, okay, the picture get more complicated, okay? Let me put it that way. Get more complicated. 30% of retirement money is invested offshore, you know, in market, that's actually market outside of Namibia. So in market outside Namibia, and another 19.7% goes to the common monetary area and broader Africa. So while the headline numbers say domestic investment is growing, I think the reality is that nearly half of your pension money is still leaving the country. You know, is still leaving the country, or at least leaving the local economy. All right. So let me put it that way. So at least leaving the local economy. So now, some of this offshore investment makes sense. Some of this, it makes sense. So you do not put all your eggs in one basket. You know, as they said, you don't put all your eggs in one basket. So you try it, you put it in a different basket. So, but there's also a tension there, you know. The tension being that Namibia desperately need investment. We desperately need investment. We need housing. We need road. We need power generations. We need factories to create jobs for our young people. We need, you know, that we need investment. Okay. And there are cases where we kind of said to Namibia, don't we have money actually to invest in these and that and that? Don't you remember? There are so many things. Sometimes we say, why is actually a foreign, you know, take that percentage, take over the 10% of that mine. There was a 10% of which mine actually. So why is a foreign company should actually take that? You know, why can't we invest with this money? You know? Yeah. So those are some of the issues that we really, with this money, we're investing outside. So there are still a lot that we're investing outside. So instead of actually investing, you know, in here. So, and you have to think, our unemployment rate is among the highest in the world. It's among the highest in the world. So our youth are restless, and rightfully so, think so, because, you know, if you sit at home and you don't see an improvement or something, you know, in terms of your future. So the question becomes, is the balance right? So that's my question. Is the balance right? Are we sending too much money abroad when there's so much need at home? Okay? I mean, look around. As I said, the unemployment rate is among the highest in the world. So maybe we are investing too much out with less money than actually the need here at home. I'm just asking, you know. It's just, you know, you may understand better than I do. I'm just I'm just teasing it out for you. All right. So yeah, and let me be clear about something also. You know, when I say need at home, I'm not talking about, you know, government vanity projects, or I'm not talking about I'm talking about, you know, productive investment, you know, real business that hire real people, not connected tenders, not political / funds, you know, but genuine economic development. Okay. That is where pension money should go. That's where pension money should go. Okay, and if it is not going there, then we as citizens have actually a right to ask why not. We have a right to ask why not. Now there's another element, you know, when I read the story, which not covered in the story, but think about that. The excluded majority. Now, here is the part of the story that bothers me the most. And I want you to really think about this one. So for 428,000 Namibian, that is the number with retirement cover, 428,000 Namibians. Now, out of a population of roughly over 3 million people, now, out of a workforce that is much, much larger than 428,000. Now, that means million of Namibians are working today with no retirement saving whatsoever. No pension, provident fund, nothing. Nothing. So, and think about street vendors who wakes up at 4 a.m. to set up her store or wherever she go and sell. Think of the farm workers, farm workers in Hardap region who has been laboring on the same farm for 20 years. Think about domestic workers that in Ludersvechtdorf, who takes care of other people's children, but has nothing put aside for her own old age. These people are, and we always say this, these are the backbone of this economy. Okay? They are the backbone of this economy. And yet, when it comes to retirement saving, they do not exist in the system. They do not exist in the system. So, this is not just an economic issue. All right? For me, I believe it is also a social justice issue. It's a human dignity issue, because what happened to those workers when they can no longer work? So who take care of them? So in Namibia, I think the answer is usually the extended family. It's the extended family that actually take care of that. And our families are already stretched to breaking point. They're really stretched to a breaking point already. A grandmother in Omsati, cannot carry the weight of, for young people who are not actually employed, she cannot carry the weight of 3 unemployed adult children and their family, them and their family. So because staying at home and doing nothing end up actually, having children. So now this grandma, is taking care of the unemployed and their children and their family on a government old age pension of a few $100 a month. So the system is failing the people who need it most. The people who need it most is actually the one that has failed, who don't have the cover. So while we celebrate this $301.7 billion in retirement saving, I think we must also confront the reality that the majority of Namibian workers are excluded from this wealth. Majority are excluded from this wealth. That inequality that we're talking about, the retirement system is as its tent is designed for the former sector. It's designed for the formal sector, those with employment contracts, for those whose employees or whose employer deduct contribution every month. For everyone else, there's nothing. There's nothing, no safety net, no fallback, no plan. Nada, nada. All right? So, when we come back, we're looking at what does this mean for you. All right? So stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right, welcome back. And thanks for joining us. If you're just joining us now, this is Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. And thanks for, you know, tuning in. And we're talking about your retirement fund and what we're looking at, what, you know, we have covered quite a couple of, you know, stuff already, you know, questions about, you know, what all this, what does all of this mean for you, really? Maybe you're sitting in your car or you're at home or, you know, you're at Subin. You could be at Subin as well. It could be wherever you are, all right, in an office. So if you are one of the 428,426 Namibian with a retirement fund, you need to be paying attention. You need to be paying attention. That money belongs to you. It belongs to you, not to the fund managers. You know, it doesn't belong to the fund managers, not to the government, not to the trustees, to you. That money belongs to you. So you have a right to know how it is being invested. You have a right to ask question at your annual fund meeting. Don't you have an annual fund meeting? You know, ask how is your money is being invested. You know, you have a right to demand transparency. And because if you do not ask, nobody will ask for you. Who will ask for you? So if you are one of the if you're one of the million of Namibian without retirement retirement cover, this story should be, I think should be a wake-up call. You are running a race with no finish line. Yeah, you're running a race with no finish line. So every year you work without, you know, without saving for a retirement. Without saving for retirement, it's a year you will pay for. I think it's a year you will pay for later. Seriously. You will pay that in hardship, in dependence, and in poverty. It sounds a bit harsh. I know what you are thinking. You know, my salary is too small. I cannot afford to save, you know, I hear you, really. I honestly hear you. But the truth is, Namibia need a better system. We need a better system. We need, how would you call this? You know, you need, what would be the word? You need, micro pension. You know, some kind of like a micro pension, micro pension, you know, product for informal workers. There should be something like that. You know, you people who understand this better, there should be something like that. You know, a micro pension product for informal workers. Eh? So we need some kind of a voluntary saving scheme. Eh? That are accessible and affordable. No, seriously. Otherwise, you know, as I said, if you're not saving for, if you're not saving for retirement, it's a year you will pay for later. Seriously, it's a year you will pay for later. And that will be in hardship, really, in poverty. Seriously. And one have to look at, the inequality that we're talking about. Okay? Yeah. So, yeah, we need, voluntary saving scheme, whatever that look like. it's something in my mind to think that aren't there some kind of can't we create those kind of savings, you know, saving schemes, you know, that are accessible and affordable. So, and we need a national conversation, you know, about how we how we spend retirement coverage to everyone, you know, not just the lucky one. How do we expand that? How do we expand this to this retirement coverage? It should be a universal coverage as well, like other things. You know, it should be a universal coverage. How do we expand that? Seriously, how do we expand retirement coverage to everyone? You know, it is very important. So not only to those who are working in a formal sector, but, you know, as I said, you lose that, you lose the other informal. Yeah. I think something in a studio that get to my throat. Okay, no matter how much I drink water, doesn't work. All right. So, yeah, as I said, we need to expand retirement coverage to everyone. It should be something that can, those who are responsible for this, I mean, we need to come up with something. And for our government, this report card is mixed. It's kind of like a mix, if you like. On one hand, the growth in retirement assets, you know, shows that the framework is working. Okay? Shows that the framework working, at least for those inside the system. All right? And for our businesses, particularly those in the formal sector, you know, the message is clear here. Okay, let's get to the caller.
A very good morning to you.
I think it's attainable. That's proposal that you're talking about, or are proposing.
Yeah.
The condition that, yes, it can be extension of those services.
Yeah, no,
I mean, services and more accessible, more specially, it can fit into informality that David was talking about and all the time. And you cater for them, because those are, most of them are really vulnerable women who are vendors and hawkers and all those things, that maybe the environment is not favorable for them in terms of policy intervention.
Yeah.
How to address their problem. But in terms of coverage to those retirement, it's good. Because most of these women, they have got, they have portion of land, even in those in informal settlement, through stock dwellers, they can actually build. So it's a matter of, it's a matter of organization and coordination and see how you can. So there is not actually an opportunity there, big one.
Yeah, no, a big one, yeah.
So
all
big
right.
Investment.
All right. As I said, for government, I think one can look at this in two ways. One, you know, on one hand, the growth is in retirement asset, as I said, shows that, you know, the framework is working. At least for those, and at least for those who are inside the system. For our business, particularly those in the formal sector, I think the message is clear. The message is clear. Your employees' retirement savings are being invested in the economy. You know, if you want that capital to flow your way, if you wanted that capital to flow your way, you need to be investable. Is that a word? Investable? Yeah, you need to be investable. This can be invested in you, you know. And there are things that you need to, clean governance, solid business plan, you know, real value creations, all these kind of things, you know. Pension money is not charity, okay? We also have to understand that it's not charity. It's also, it has to earn a return, okay? That's the whole idea. It has to earn a return. So if you want a piece of that 301, you know, 0.7 billion, make yourself worth it. Okay, that's exactly what probably Uncle Bon is saying, you know? Make yourself worth of it. You know, these are now business you know, and it's an opportunity, massive, massive, massive opportunity, you know. And as I said, there's still a good level of investment that is done in from domestically, but I think more should be more done should be done locally, because we need this investment. We need this investment. All right. So, yeah. If we quickly just look at maybe a few things that we talk about here, it's just that, you know, Namibia retirement industry hold a massive 301.7 billion. That's belonging to about 428,426 people, and it is the largest pool of capital. Sorry for that. How does this come out? All right. So it's actually the largest pool of capital in the country, and the critical driver of economic investment. So it. All right. Now the other thing is this, is that just over 50%, as I was saying earlier on, just over 50%. Of retirement money is invested domestically, and the rest goes actually offshore, and to the regional markets as well. The investment also done in the regional market. Now, whether that balance is right for Namibia's development needs, I think is an open question that deserves an honest debate. If you want, please, to come through, do call on the studio. A studio number 08333 66091, 08333 66091. Please don't call on my personal number. As I given that number sometime, you know, when we had a line problems. I saved some people as caller. I can see that. So 08333 66091, 08333 66091. You know, if you want to speak or react to what we're talking about, don't call on my personal number, on my phone. All right? So, and as I said, well, it's a question that actually deserve some honest debate. All right. Okay, maybe you'll come through here.
Yeah. Very good morning.
Yes, that's Mike.
Good morning. Welcome.
Morning, how are you?
I'm fine, and yourself?
I'm okay, Mike.
Mm.
Yeah, oh, that's Mike. I was talking about the saving up for retirement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think the majority of people are actually, you know, they don't have cover, you know, especially in the informal sector.
My friend, how can you cover it if you are getting from hand to mouth?
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, there are people, the meme actually, that the vendor, you know, remember that sometimes they send their children from that money. They may be able to save a $50 somewhere, or $100, you know. So if there was a scheme like that, you know, that just catering for them, but it's not available. That's my problem. Yeah.
You know what? Make it tough, even that is the bank is required for you to have a pay slip for you to get even a card.
Yeah,
some of them.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah.
that's
the issue. We don't have something that is actually serving our informal people.
That's why I'm saying, always advocating that, you know, we mess up with SME then, but we can do it again.
Yeah.
That's why I'm always advocating it, that, you know, we have even money laying down in the social security. What do they do to invest bad when they're saying social?
Mm.
What they mean when they're saying social security? What they do
What did they protect as a security in this country? Apart from looting our money as a man, we don't get nothing at all until you wait until you die or you get injured. My friend, some of us, we've been paying thousands and thousands to social security, but we don't get anything at all. Especially those, us who are having even companies. There's annual return for 1.7. It's a lot of money if you calculate it to a lot of companies which are around Namibia.
Yeah,
but I'm telling you, and it is now that you have to pay your membership ship card to those workers which are there. But at the end of the day, some of us, we end up having owing the social security because we are no more getting anything in the business.
Yeah, it's true.
But, yeah, but for me, I want even social security to invest in something.
Exactly.
Which are able to keep the even the small SME, like the member, which are the vendors.
Yeah.
Getting something there. Mm-hmm. Apart from their toilets only for social security to get their card and what allowance and what when they are pregnant. I want something really tangible from social security. And it's the same with also the IPF.
Which can also, like even with social security, only work with people that are working in a formal sector. It should be also in informal. That when somebody now is no longer, be able to sit by her stand to sell, there are certain amount. Now the social security can actually pay this person maybe half, like what they do, for employees for 3 months, Why not? Many employees are in informal sector.
They are.
You see, the
thing is, that's why people are encouraged to do that. And I think there are a lot of them aware now to register with social security. But for me, is that when people are struggling, social security, they must have something which is to support them. Because you cannot just deduct people until the person is now, his business is closed. Now, a person is in need help as your client, but now there's no way to be found. There's no way to be found.
That's very true, yeah. This is where now they should come for you. They should come for
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a problem I think we have. Look, we cannot just have a DIPF waiting for people for retirement or when they are passed on. There must be something. That's why I'm saying the way we learn our modern business.
Yeah.
We are learning like we are in the 1960s something when American that time. But like now, company are doing something to gain. The money is not supposed to stand the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, the money is supposed to recycle. Just like the person when you are investing.
Yeah.
You don't invest your money just to be there. You need something to bring back, to create more welfare.
Actually.
But
for the living standard of the people, it's not just that you have this massive money in the bank, sitting
the bank
there.
Hide there.
Yeah. So the money should work,
Yeah.
Should
what improve. I'm telling you now, when we are crying a high unemployment, I'm looking at these people with no money.
Yeah.
What is wrong with us? Why we cannot think out of the box? Huh?
With a small population like Namibia, that's the most heartening thing, when you think about this. It's a small population, really.
I'm telling you to insult.
And this is what the president normally said: we have too few to be poor. No, seriously.
They're saying always that, but what is the solution? Apart from your fund, yes, that wealth with your fund, but your fund is just a circle of friends and their family. If it was SME bank, the way I'm saying, the bank is able to follow up who adopted beneficial, who didn't pay, who paid.
Mm.
You see? But if you're having like your fund, up to now those 200 people, I never even know one person. I was even asking it to Angwena, like, no, guys, did you apply? Yes, we did, but anybody you see come out, nothing.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the constituency now. The whole constituency, some of them, I know more than even 15 people.
Yeah.
None of them will come out. Now, who are those 200?
Yeah. And sometimes this is actually, the evaluation is, you know, the bank, exactly. I think sometimes, you know what, the thing is this, the whole idea, the whole plan, you know, the whole thing is a very good plan, good initiatives. But the process, it's actually still done by the institutions that were not able to get, that have the criteria that were already discriminating most people that are coming from rural area, because they may not qualify. It's exactly qualify. They're using the same criteria to select who they are select. Okay?
Which is wrong.
Yeah. So, because now young people have to pay money, you know, to make sure that, you know, their business plan, it's spotless, you know?
Yeah.
And doing that, you know, you have no guarantee of that you will actually be able to get that. So you understand. Yeah.
And then for you to qualify, Mike, now, the business which you're currently doing, not already in the qualification of list of the what things I need to be funded.
Yeah.
Now, your business is doing a business for you, plan. You have to come up with something else which you yourself you don't understand even what you are engaging in. You see? And this is what is happening to our youth today.
All right. We're going to get on the interview that we have at Kora. So please.
Okay, my brother. Yeah. I was even waiting for the interview. Maybe I thought, this is not coming.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll.
All right.
If you have there were minutes left, I will come back. Yeah. Thank
all
you.
All right. Okay, good.
All right.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafasa na longeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moya o, ota ingongo tisa mweni. Anangeshifa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayakudo nirandisoma yoe, yongeshifa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende kuimeneha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moa mgoo lengira seoma kodara heta tuimu. Datu heari hamano tano o liari. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back and a very good morning to you if you're just joining us, and welcome to Unpacking the Day. I'm glad you are tuning in, because at this point in time, I want us to talk about your money, okay? According to a daily newspaper, the Namibian government has reportedly awarded 350 million in direct tenders without open bidding or public scrutiny, bypassing the Central Procurement Board. Now, sport stadium, traffic system, hospital refurbishment, all awarded directly to the state-owned enterprises under what the presidency called business as unusual. Now, the IPPR is calling it a recipe for, you know, for corruption. So joining me Now is Frederico Links, the IPPR Research Associate. Mr. Frederico, good morning and welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning, Mike, and thanks for having me on to talk about this.
All right. Now, for listeners who may not be familiar with how public procurement is supposed to work in Namibia, you know, can you walk us through what the normal procedure look like and why it exists?
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to understand, you know, that there are levels to procurement. So, there are thresholds for where projects, and it's usually your large above a certain dollar threshold.
Yeah.
Your major infrastructure and service and purchases have to pass through the Central Procurement Board.
Yeah.
And then in lower thresholds, they can be handled at public institution level. So there are certain thresholds. There are three categories of public enterprises, three categories of their the different these different thresholds that apply to different categories of public enterprises or public entities. So, you know, when it comes to these major procurement matters, the proper way of doing this, according to the law and regulations, is to have it being handled by the Central Procurement Board to do the bid adjudication around these big procurements. When we're talking about infrastructure, because this is what the article refers to, references infrastructure type projects.
Yeah.
So the Central Procurement Board usually then is tasked with adjudicating these sorts of awards.
Now the government is calling this a business unusual approach to fast track now development. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like urgency and action. What is wrong with wanting to move faster?
This isn't anything unusual. This isn't business unusual.
Yeah.
To be honest, we've seen this. This is a reversion to how government has always traditionally, if you look back, historically done things, bypassing the proper rules and procedures, and using the justification of urgency, of emergency, to justify this sort of approach.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't, you know, this isn't anything unusual. We've seen this. This was what was happening. It was widespread under the old tender board system. It has become characteristic of the new public procurement framework dispensation.
Mm.
And even the procurement policy unit in reports a few years ago around COVID procurement.
Yeah.
And even before COVID procurement, in the 2018-19-20 financial years, warned against the excessive and use of emergency procurement and direct procurements to make purchases and award contracts and that sort of thing. So it isn't unusual. This is how things have been done.
Yeah.
And this has become the culture to bypass proper rules and procedures, to bypass compliance systems, in order with the justification of saying we need to implement this fast. This is classic red flag type behavior that we need to be aware of, and that's why we're saying, you know, look, I mean, this shouldn't be the way things are done.
Mm-hmm.
Setting aside proper rules and procedures just because you want something to be implemented fast.
Mm.
Now, there are ways you can do this, but you need to, if the system is slow and delaying, then you need to fix what is causing that.
Yeah. the red tape,
you can't wish it away. If there are problems in the system, fix the system to make things work faster. But to just, you know, decide to work outside of, you know, what should be the default, and the default should be putting, you know, tenders out in the open market and having the best bids, best qualifying bids being adjudicated in a competitive on a competitive procurement landscape. That's the default. That's what the law says. And now to actually now say the default will be for public entities to just directly procure, you know, with other state entities, and thereby bypassing, you know, sort of best practice, and you know, you don't know if you're getting value for money if you're doing this, giving it to a state entity to do. Bypassing this process and then just handing it over to a public entity, one public entity handing over a contract to another public entity to deliver. I mean, I don't think this is the way to go.
Now, the Public Procurement Act of 2015 does allow for, I think you're alluding to that, for direct procurement in certain cases, like emergency, sole supplier, and a situation where bidding is impractical or something like that. Do any of these projects fit that description in your view?
No, I mean, I don't think they do. I mean, if it's like, for instance, a stronger case can be made, for instance, when it comes to health sector procurement, where you need medicines, where you need equipment, where you need certain products, and then you can say, you know, we've run out of this, and ahead of what, you know, what we thought would be the point at which we run out of this, so we need to purchase this quickly. Then you can make a stronger case for emergency procurement.
Yeah.
But, you know, you also have to be careful in that regard, because there have been problems with, you know, just reverting to emergency procurement and direct procurement in the health sector. We've seen this over the years, the controversies that have surfaced there. But when it comes to, for instance, these, when it comes to these stadium projects, if you look back, I mean, what is the emergency exactly?
Yeah.
If you look back at the 2019 Swapo Party manifesto, for instance, election manifesto, the stadiums were already in there, upgrading the stadiums and you know, doing all these regional stadium upgrades and the Independence Stadium upgrade. They're all in there. So when you look at this, when did the emergency arise? When already 6-7 years ago, we knew these upgrades were already on the political sort of discussion table, and they were part of the discussions around what the ruling party was going to do in terms of when it came back into office in 2020. You know, following the 2019 election, it was in the manifesto. So you can't say that this is something that has suddenly arisen. It was in the manifesto in 2019. It was in the manifesto in 2024. And it wasn't implemented. So, you know, if you're saying something arose suddenly, then I can understand an emergency, but this is something that has been coming on for years and years, for almost a decade now, these sorts of plans. So now, all of a sudden, it becomes an emergency. Now we have to revert to doing things in a way that that is, you know, sort of questionable. So, I mean, the whole issue of emergency doesn't really arise.
Yeah.
And if you, you know, going back to the framework, the framework has a default. Default is open competitive bidding.
Yeah.
And only in exceptional circumstances should emergency procurement or direct procurement be the preferred method.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Preferred method of procurement. And you know, when we did the MAPS assessment in 2023-2024 and the report that came out last year, the methodology for assessing procurement systems, which was done by World Bank consultants on behalf of the Namibian government, the Ministry of Finance, they, in that report, they themselves, these World Bank consultants also said the widespread use of emergency procurement to, you know, is not justified. The widespread use of direct procurement is not justified in most of the cases. Now, if you look at the reports produced by the Procurement Policy Unit back from 2018 onwards, they make the same in reports that we've actually written about in our procurement tracker. They make the same in those reports where they looked at the use of direct procurement and emergency procurement in by a range of entities, public entities, and they themselves came to the conclusion that in most of these cases, the use of an emergency was not justified. It basically comes down to poor planning, poor implementation, delayed implementation, and then using emergency towards the end, the justification of an emergency at towards the end of the financial year when you now have to implement the stuff. Now you want to say this is an emergency now. We need to implement this now, and then going over to using emergency procurement as the preferred method, or having a public entity do it.
Yeah.
So even in that sense, you know, it isn't justified in most cases. And this comes out of government, and this comes out of World Bank consultants that have looked at the use of this. And really, we need to take this into account when we talk about what is being proposed.
That's a quick commercial quickly, and then we come back from this quickly. Yeah.
Imbaya riri ombo na hii etetraweza kwa ombu mikiro ombe ombi hukusha njiviro yoye iriri ombu pu ohatane na wina ikare no masa kumurungi wa indu waliri ongere kusha umune ondengu ukura kwa imba una ovi umedia peke kwa ugondola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwe soo kwika ovingi no kukara norupa ondando ya peke yukia nja oshimariva owa peresente dano kumyeze vitatu moshimariva owa peresente umurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva owa peresente umirongo ivari na dano Kumyeze ya mulongwa na bivari moshimarifu. Litoro rela ondengu, jima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyanukite. Ashiesho imba ye kute oshimariva shishihina omarifiro. Imba o maoronga neno uyeru haka enina. Itako na wina rishangika njimon.
All right, welcome back. And now, when we look at the report in the daily newspapers, the road contract company get 140 million for stadium in 14 regions. August 26 get the traffic system and the hospital job. Now, these are state-owned enterprises. And some people might say, well, the money is staying in the government's hands. So what is the problem? So how do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, so the Construction Industries Federation of Namibia has come out and said, I think it was last week. That, you know, putting public entities awarding these sorts of contracts to other public entities, you know, it not only undermines open competitive bidding and procurement, and money flowing into the economy. It actually undermines our construction industry, where you know there are companies that are looking to getting government contracts to keep their people employed, to make money, to you know there are other spillover effects in various other sectors, in the retail sector, in the you know in the because these companies purchase from retailers and so on. So there are other you know, spillovers. There's employment that comes in to come into focus within the construction sector, for instance. So, I mean, these are all things that there's a bigger picture here that needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
And this is what the Construction Industries Federation has said. It is undermining of Namibian businesses when public entities do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as I said, I mean, are we really getting value for money? Will the RCC or August 26 deliver the quality of work that maybe a private entity could have delivered?
Mm-hmm.
Those are all questions. And will they deliver it on time and to scope? So, I mean, these are all questions that need to be, that come into focus when we're talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are wider effects here. And this is what, you know, the Construction Industries Federation has pointed to.
Yeah. And there is this idea of local content in procurement, making sure that Namibian companies, Namibian workers, Namibian material benefit.
Exactly.
Now, how does direct tendering threaten that?
Yeah, I mean, so you award you know, these contracts to hand-picked entities without, and these entities, I mean, as I said, they might not be the best.
Yeah, exactly.
In this job.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really an issue around quality and value for money.
Mm.
You know, if you're just handpicking a supplier or a contractor, because you think they might be able to implement this at cost at an affordable cost,
yeah.
You know, because they're a public entity, not really in it for a profit. So, I mean, if that's the thinking, I mean, I can understand the thinking.
Yeah.
Is this really appropriate? Is this really the best way to do things? Or does it smack of, you know, there has been a failure of implementation, planning and implementation that we're not talking about here.
Yeah.
And that's really the issue here. Why has it taken so long for the projects to get off the ground? I mean, the whole Swapo Party Manifesto implementation plan, if you look at what it says about timelines and time frames and deadlines and so on, a lot of the stuff is behind where it should be, where they should be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who's responsible? Who's being held accountable for the lack of implementation, if that is the case? And now we want to fast track things because, you know, we want to catch up again to our timelines and timeframes and deadlines. And so we want to do it, by giving these contracts to preferred entities, which might not be the best to be able to deliver. So, I mean, there's so many questions here that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
But I think the core questions are, you know, the issues around that has been plaguing government for the longest time is the issues around the quality of planning, the quality, the pace of decision making, and then the pace of implementation, and the quality of implementation. These are things that need to be fixed. We can't get around those issues. Because we can fast track these projects, but if they then are substandard and suboptimal, the what is delivered, then what is the excuse then?
Yeah. So, but the other thing is also then maybe looking at the trade off in terms of maybe some might argue, look, we have been waiting years for stadium, for better hospital, for infrastructure. If direct tendering get it done quicker, isn't that a trade off worth taking or worth making?
Yeah, but I mean, look. If we go back to, for instance, the mass housing scheme,
yeah,
you know, and we look at what we know of what happened there, as I said, the issues around these particular procurement matters have been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Housing and sanitation and stadia and the quality of stadia and upgrading those and building new ones. These are issues that are coming on for a decade and more. These aren't things that have suddenly emerged.
Yeah.
As I said, you know, the issue is, that needs to be addressed is why has government moved so slow?
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back and you look at the Harambe Prosperity Plan from 2015 onwards, 2014-15 onwards, you know, some of these things are in there.
Harambe
Prosperity Plan too.
Yeah.
And in the manifestos, the 2014 Swapo Party manifesto, the sanitation issue, and the promises of building so many toilets and so on.
Yeah.
You go and look at them. I mean, this is more than a decade ago.
Yeah.
You go and look at them and you see that these things are in there, in these manifestos. So the issue isn't that this is suddenly a matter that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
The issue is why haven't previous administrations addressed, and we talk about the housing issue.
Mm.
What happened to the mass housing where, you know, we can make the argument, yeah, we need to really do this. We need to build houses. We need to build sanitation facilities. We need to do all of this. Yes, that was from the Pohamba era. I mean, go back to mass housing.
Yeah.
What were the issues? Why weren't they delivered on over the last 15, 20 years, going back all those, over these past few administrations? So the issue isn't that this is suddenly an issue. The issue is, what has become... Why has government failed to implement, failed to make plan, failed to make the decisions that could move things forward?
Yeah.
And now use an emergency, the justification, the rationale of an emergency to want to bypass proper legal processes and governance structures.
Yeah.
To all of a sudden say, yeah, we needed this infrastructure 15 years ago. We were talking about this 15 years ago.
Yeah.
We didn't implement. And now we're talking about it again, and we're making the same argument.
Mm. Yeah.
No, this isn't new. This isn't new. None of this is new.
And the other thing, we have seen procurement scandal in Namibia before, and the fishing scandal being a painful recent memory. So do you see echoes of those pattern in what is happening here?
Well, I mean, I think the mass housing scheme project from the second Pohamba administration should be really the cautionary tale for us, looking at what is being proposed now. Because, you know, a lot was promised, similar to what is happening now in terms of infrastructure. A lot was promised and not delivered on.
Yeah.
And the same goes for the mass land servicing scheme, if you remember that, going back a few years, about a decade, under the first Gangok presidency. The mass land servicing scheme. What has happened? And so these are cautionary tales. We've been here before, where these major infrastructure and developments have been promised and not delivered on or under delivered on substantially.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of money was spent.
Yeah.
And we don't know. You know, that's where the issue of transparency comes. We don't know exactly what this money was spent on.
Yeah.
And if you consider the reports of 100 plus infrastructure projects that have not been completed, where the contractors have just disappeared or walked away and so on, uncompleted infrastructure projects. We're sitting with things like that already. And now we're proposing more infrastructure projects of the same kind,
yeah,
that could end up the same way, where there is under delivery, there is under implementation,
yeah,
there is substandard delivery, there, yeah, is
and without a lack without of the diagnosis,
accountability, and yeah, so on, yeah,
yeah, without also the diagnosis, what actually, how this actually, how these projects have failed, what made them fail, and all that. Now, exactly. The other thing is, what role should Parliament actually play in all of this? Do our lawmakers really asking the right questions here?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other issue that we have, the quality of formal oversight, which really should be the legislature, Parliament, holding the executive accountable, government, yeah, accountable for, you know, and demanding to see these, you know, what is your implementation plan?
Mm.
We'd like to see it. What is your, what are you going to do in terms of, because this is what is being, what was proposed in the Swabo Party Manifesto Implementation Plan, you know, sort of a reporting system.
Yeah.
There's sort of an outline of a reporting system in there, you know, that contractors have to report back to public entities, and their public entities having to produce reports. And so there's an outline of a reporting system. Now, there's a reporting system in the Public Procurement Act framework as well.
Yeah.
So, but the issue has been, and we're sitting with that issue currently, for instance, where we have a low level of compliance with reporting, with producing annual procurement plans where we can actually see what public entities are going to be spending in terms of procurement on what projects and what contracting on what services and so on.
Mm.
So we have access to a small number of annual procurement plans, so there's a lack of compliance with that,
mm,
in terms of submitting annual procurement plans to the procurement policy unit and giving the public transparency and parliamentarians transparency in terms of what is being proposed in terms of procurement and contracting and service delivery. And then in terms of the reporting, now this, on actual procurement matters and transactions, the quality and level of reporting on,
yeah,
on this on a quarterly and on an annual basis by public entities. This is something that has been flagged by the Procurement Policy Unit repeatedly over the years, the issue of public entities not complying with their reporting requirements under the Procurement Act framework.
Mm.
So we simply do not have access to the information that would allow us to hold public entities accountable for,
yeah,
what,
yeah,
they are doing and what they are spending,
yeah,
and so on. And I mean, the parliamentarians, despite us repeatedly writing about this in our procurement tracker and surfacing these issues around reporting compliance,
yeah,
the questions aren't being asked, or not being asked in a sort of decisive and assertive manner to try and get public entities and government to provide, you know, good answers for why things are being done the way they are being done.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is really what Parliament needs to do, is to keep sight of what is happening in terms of government spending.
Mm.
And this is where I think our parliamentarians aren't up to standard.
Yeah.
Where they don't really have a grasp of, you know, the financial aspects related to development in this country.
Yeah. Now, is there a way, like, you know, to fast track development and still maintain proper procurement processes, or are those two things always going to be in tension?
No, I mean, look, I mean, in countries around the world, you know, things are working.
Mm.
You know, they can put out tenders quickly and make decisions quickly and implement them quickly. So it's not something that we don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
We just need to fix what's wrong with our system. Why have we come to a point where the quickest way to get something implemented is to bypass
the process? Yeah.
Why have we come here? I mean, we've been looking at the system now for 10 years. We're 10 years basically into the Public Procurement Act framework implementation. And we're 10 years in and the default within government is becoming one of wanting to bypass the system and its processes.
Yeah.
Why have we come to this? We need to be interrogating those issues. And this is something we've repeatedly said over the years. Why have we come to this, and why aren't we dealing adequately, answering these questions adequately and dealing with those answers in a way that takes us to solutions and fixes for what's wrong with the system as it is?
Yeah.
That's really what we need to do. Through the procurement tracker, we try and encourage government to, you know, let's fix this system.
Yeah.
Because we can't move forward with a broken system and with a culture that has set in now of non-compliance. It simply won't work. The system will collapse at some point. So we need to fix the system and we need to enforce compliance.
Yeah.
And that's really what we need to do. Now, somehow what is proposed now is implemented and the reporting is actually, you know, sort of up to standard, up to a standard that we can say, you know, that this is something that is business abnormal, is business unusual. Yeah. Then, I mean, I think we all can say, you know what, the administration has kept to its word in terms of its commitments to transparency and accountability.
Mm.
But, you know, I simply can't see it at this point. And I think we're unnecessarily undermining proper systems and processes and governance structures in order to using the rationale of wanting to fast track development.
Yeah. You just mentioned that you can't see it at this point in time. Now, if this becomes the new norms, you know, direct tender as the default, not the exception, what does that mean for Namibia going forward?
Yeah, I mean, that is, I mean, that's the question. So, I mean, I think a lot of interested parties have already pointed to this. You know, this was what, if you go back to the old tender board system up to 2015, up to 2017, where by the last years of that last decade of the old tender board system, basically almost 60 to 80% of tenders were awarded via direct or emergency procurement.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of these procurement matters were shrouded under clouds suspicion of corrupt dealing.
Yeah.
And there was widespread under-delivery. Because as I said earlier, a lot of the issues we're now dealing with are historical infrastructure and sort of contracting and related issues.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, a lot of these projects that we're now talking about actually have a long run up to this point,
yeah,
where they've been on the sort of the government discussion table for at least 15 years, and you know, the housing, the sanitation, the stadia, the quality, the state of sports facilities, and so on. These things have a long run up, and money has been awarded over the years. What has been delivered? So these things are, you know, if you go back to, for instance, the toilet building scheme and what we saw happened there in the late 2010s, where sanitation facilities were supposed to have been built across parts of the country, where you had these overinflated, exaggerated costs related to some of these facilities that were delivered. You know, if you go back to that and you look at what happened there, you know, and this was under the old tender board system, you can see, you know, if we go down this route, we might be facing the same situations. If we go down to, if we look at what was happening under the mass housing scheme, where, you know, half-built houses were left, and all the money had been spent.
Yeah.
You know, what happened? So, I mean, these are all things we've been here before.
Yeah.
And we've seen how this plays out if it isn't properly managed.
Yeah.
If it isn't properly, if there isn't proper oversight, if there isn't proper public scrutiny and there isn't proper transparency and accountability. Nobody is held accountable for the failures.
Yeah.
And the under implementation and so on. We've been here before.
Yeah.
We really ought to have learned the lessons by now.
Yeah.
Because what we're asking basically is the same institutions that have, you know, under-delivered in all of these, you know, what we're talking about here, these development projects, the same public institutions that are afflicted by a culture of non-compliance under the public procurement system. We're now asking those same public entities to do something different.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. Now, Frederico, the final thought, you know, if there was one thing, you know, if there is one thing you want every Namibian listening right now to understand, why this matter, what is that?
Look, I mean, this is about value for money. This is about service delivery.
Yeah.
And that is what impacts all of our lives. You know, is the service that is being promised, is it actually delivered? Is the development that is being promised, is it actually delivered? Mm. Has it improved our lives as Namibians?
Mm.
That is really what this is about. And so what we try and do is to encourage Namibians to take ownership of this.
Yeah.
To scrutinize, to ask the questions, to demand answers. You said you are going to implement this. You're going to do this.
Yeah.
Are you doing this? So, you know, if you out there and wherever you are in communities across the country, if you have been promised a certain development, a sports field or that, or something similar, you know, and it's supposed to be happening. It's, you know, we're moving towards 2030.
Yeah.
It's supposed to. You need to be on the ground, scrutinizing and monitoring that this is actually being implemented. You go there. You look at the site. Are they there? Are they doing it? And then if it's not happening, you at community level, you come together, you mobilize, you ask the questions, you demand the answers. It's time as citizens we start holding government accountable for the quality of implementation when it comes to these promised developments. So we need to take ownership. It is our responsibility as citizens in a democracy to each and every one of us hold our government accountable for what it promises to do in terms of improving our lives and livelihoods and spending the money. It isn't government's money.
Yeah.
It is our money.
Mm.
It is our money that we need to keep track of, the spending of which we need to monitor.
Yeah.
So that is what we need to do. So, I mean, the message goes out more to Namibians, to fellow citizens, to ordinary people, to take an interest in this because this impacts our lives.
Yeah. Frederico, I want to thank you sincerely for joining us on Unpacking the Day this morning, and we appreciate your time your research that you're doing and your willingness actually to speak to us. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me on to talk about this.
All right. Thanks. All right. That was Frederico Links, the IPPR associate research. Giving us the research associate, giving us the breakdown on issues. On issues that reacting on, actually the IPPR reacted on the issue of 350 million, handed over. Government has reportedly, awarded 350 million in a direct tenders without open bidding or public scrutiny and passing the central procurement board. So we have only 2 minutes left. So maybe we can also, those who want to react this and want to also to contribute, we can do that also tomorrow. We can pick up this tomorrow as well if you want to. But if you are quick enough, to just make your point immediately, so you're welcome to come through. 08-333-66091. 08-333-66091. All right. So if you want to come through. So nope. So it's only 1 minute left. I don't think I would allow anybody come through any more. All right. We do this tomorrow. If you want to react to that, it's quite, a lot of that, that we have covered, that he has actually, covered. And, it opened our eyes to somehow this. I mean, many of you probably understand how the procurement work, but also, speaking in terms of, what is the emergency? If why can't we change the process? If the process is the problem, if the system is the problem, change it, to the way now that it works for you. All right. So, yeah. You have a second? Just a second.
Thank you. Bon dia, Prim.
Yeah. Bon dia. Como está?
Bon brigado.
Just you have 1 minute. 1 minute before that the France actually cut off my head.
Yes. Okay. But I think we need sometimes to follow the system. I think we are fighting the system.
Yeah.
So if you fight the system, you always doing wrong.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to follow the system to see what the system say. Then from there, you can say, okay, let us change here. But you just come inside the system.
It's actually finding out why is our system not working for us?
It's not working for us because you are not following the system.
Yeah.
Yes. You need to follow the system. System are there. But I mean, we want to take shortcuts and jump to, is there a four-way stop? You come there, you don't stop, you just pass by.
Yeah.
Yes. I think I think it's good, but we need sometimes to follow our system to see what can we do, what can we gain from it.
Yeah.
Because what we sometimes we the system already there. We are not following the system, but the system say we want to fight the system, then we go wrong, then we blame each other. No, it's you, it's me, it's you, it's me.
Yeah.
All right.
No, thanks for coming through. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. We can always pick this up tomorrow. If you want to, if you have a point that you want to make and, because it's quite very important. It's quite very important. Do that. Let's do that. I'll bring it up tomorrow again. And then, and see what you have to say. All right. Oh, wait. I nearly mentioned the number again for you to come. To come through. So our time is 1 minute past the hour of 10. And technically and actually, that's bring us to the end of our show this morning. And I know I'm going to leave you in the hands of a very capable hand, equally engaging coming up, equally engaging. So make sure that you stay tuned. Let me hand over to Tete France in Windhoek, it's out of here. So it's out of the north. We go back to the capital. From me, Michael Shoveli, I think we see each other tomorrow. So let's do this again tomorrow at the same time from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock. So bye for now.